Hi, my name is Amanda Panacea, and you're listening to the Healer Revolution podcast. This is a community for self-healers, biohackers, practitioners, and any other helping professionals. You're in the right place if you're seeking conversations about how pain becomes passion, the connection between physical, energetic, mental, and our spiritual self, finding your body's ancient wisdom, the latest biohacking technologies, clinical research, and if you just want to nerd out about complex biochemistry and quantum physics. But this is also for entrepreneurs who seek infinite abundance and a supportive community. So pour a cup of King Coffee or Sistis Tea and let's join the revolution. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Healer Revolution podcast. This is Amanda Panacea, and I'm really excited today to invite on one of my guests, who is the first repeat guest that I'm having back, Lindsay LaCrèche. Woo! Hi, Lindsay.
Hey. Thanks for having me back. This has been something I was looking forward to ever since we had so much fun in the first one. It's always just a good time to have some like gal to gal chat in the world of biohacking in whatever way you want to interpret that.
Yes. People who get like the multiple different things that you've tried in your life, like the hundreds of thousands of different biohacks and diets and things like that. Yes. And don't look at you like you're absolutely insane.
Totally. It's like the new version of like recipe swapping, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, today I wanted to have you back on because first time we talked about epigenetics and we dove a little bit into peptides. And since then, they have just exploded on the internet and social media. And you also offer this in your coaching business along with epigenetics. So I figured let's get on and let's talk about it. Let's bust some myths about what are peptides, how to use them, where to get them, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, let's do it. The world needs to know. These are things that, you know, I feel bad if I don't share with the world because they've been pretty epic as far as my healing path and very specific tools.
Yes, definitely. So first, let's just get a foundation. What even is a peptide?
Yeah. So peptides are typically reproduced from a chain of amino acids that your body naturally makes. So they are mostly synthetic, but also mimicking peptides that your body does naturally make. So it's very similar to say like anything else that you would supplement, or even really, if you think of it at a baseline, they're kind of like really fancy amino acids. So if you've ever taken like EAAs or BCAAs for supplementation, those are typically ones that you're more familiar with, or many people are, you know, a little bit more mainstream. Peptides get really fancy and they are basically, you know, specifically engineered to activate specific genetic pathways and essentially help to reinforce or reset the production of certain chemistries within your own body. So that's kind of the nutshell. And what's really cool about that is even kind of understanding that at the end of the day, they're just amino acids and really fancy chains of amino acids or proteins. There's so much that you can do with them. And there are so many different variations of similar types. And it's a wild world. So yeah, it can definitely be a little overwhelming, but it's a very fun place to explore for sure.
Yeah. And I kind of like to explain it as if like, okay, so let's say we have growth hormone and it's, I don't know for a fact, but it's like 150 amino acids strung together. The peptide would maybe be like, they've chosen these 10.
Yeah.
Like a little teeny segment of
that. Exactly. Yeah. So they are very, very specifically created. And that's why you can have variations or several different variations of similar ones. Honestly, that's why a lot of peptides, like depending on what your concern is, there's so many ways you can go with it. So for example, if you're someone who's looking to target immune regulation, then I mean, there's like a whole can, there are hundreds probably. I mean, the top of the mind, at least a dozen different options that have been somewhat clinically trialed, a lot of anecdotal feedback when it comes to peptides, depending on which one. But yeah, there's so many different directions that sometimes it's really great if you do have some sort of insights into your specific chemistry. So that's where with the DNA testing, it can be helpful as a strategy or kind of like a guide. Definitely not a must by any stretch, but there are are certain genes that we know enough about that we can pair with specific peptides if that's something that's available. And we can kind of get really nerdy and target very specifically in some cases. And also in other cases, we're kind of going more by like majority rules and kind of getting into some of the anecdotal indications of these peptides that have been around for a long time.
Yeah. So talk about that. How long have they been around? What are like the OG peptides people didn't even realize were peptides?
You know, that's a great question. There are so many. I would dare say I wouldn't even know where to begin as far as when they first started, because also these are things that have been really studied for decades, going into really like probably over 100 years in certain countries. Now, in America, a little bit of a different scene, but certain peptides have absolutely been on the market for a lot longer than anyone has ever really realized. And the reason why we've seen such a boom about this whole industry in the past really 18 months, maybe, is with the GLP-1s, which has, you know, taken over the internet to some degree. I feel like it's starting to die down, but, you know, fingers crossed, I don't know. It was a very interesting time over the past 12 months as a, you know, coach or practitioner who uses peptides in practice and also who uses peptides personally to a pretty extravagant degree, you could say. But specifically with the GLP-1 conversation, that's a journey that I have been on and was very successful with. And so I'm a big advocate for that. And it's always such a charged conversation, like especially anytime you're talking anything to do with weight, it's always going to be very triggering for a lot of people. And I think we saw like firsthand a lot of people reacting to some, you know, belief systems and perspectives that we all carry variations of, and, you know, to some degree or another have levels of awareness around, but there were a lot of conversations that were really springing up around GLP-1s. And it was kind of this perception for someone who didn't know anything about peptides previously, you think, oh, this is this new thing that just came out, you know, just came up. And it's like, no, actually they just started trending. They've been around for many, 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 many years. So even if you just isolate that concept to GLP-1s, these are things that have been studied for decades, really. Now, there's always an evolution, right? So we're seeing them come to market in new ways. We're seeing some different variations in the GLP-1 category. But yeah, peptides have been around for a very long time is kind of the nutshell answer. And again, many of them have been clinically trialed under, well, with specific gene activations, for example, not all of them, right? So there are definitely peptides that we know more about than others. But truly not anything new in the grand scheme of things. I actually got started using peptides in about 2021, if I'm not mistaken, possibly 2020, I did a training, in peptide therapies and went really kind of bird's eye view into a lot of the different categories. So you have your growth hormone secretagogues, you have your immune regulatory peptides, some that are very fluid depending on what you're looking for hormonal balance and different types of things, some that are straight up like body comp, here you go, this is what's going to happen. So again, getting really nuanced into who needs what can be a very fun conversation to explore. And it depends on a lot of things, as always. Right. So that's where it gets a little bit murky, is like, how do you know what to do? How do you know what to get? And how do you know how to do it? And like, right, the answer is you don't. The answer is like, there really aren't, to some degree, somewhat more than others, but there aren't really like standardized dosings for the majority of peptides. Mm-hmm. Many of them, again, we have more research on and we know kind of a starting point, but that's always something that needs to be tailored to the individual. And so in a perfect world, you know, my suggestion is always to work with a practitioner who's well-versed in peptides, who has treated clients with peptides and has just experience in the arena that you're looking for, because it's definitely not usually a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. And it's a very, you can very quickly go to the dark places on the internet when you start looking for information about pretty much any different concern that you're looking for, anything from dosing to sourcing to, you know, it's like the Wild West. And basically there's, you know, thousands upon thousands of people that are looking for these solutions on like your Reddits or your Facebook groups and things like that. And just kind of word of mouth. And it's a little scary potentially. And also that makes it sometimes feel a little bit challenging. I feel like I'm gatekeeping information, Amanda, because I'm like, no, I really want you all to know how awesome these things are. And also usually it needs a little bit of a titration or supervision with a practitioner, at least in the early, you know, in the initiation stage.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, makes total sense. I think what people get into with like looking at peptides is it's either miracle, you're going to lose all this weight and feel great, or you're going to rebound, you're going to have muscle paralysis, gut paralysis, and you're going to die.
So. Yeah. Well, and you know, that's such an interesting point because I have had such a beautiful experience with the GLP-1 for the past, I mean, I've been on this particular one, tirzepatide, since last January. So at the current moment, a little over a year, and have had virtually no negative side effects, have had kind of like the walk in the park experience that we all hope for. Yeah. And I've also had the unique experience of coaching at least 50 women through a protocol and, you know, successfully. And so while not everyone has that walk in the park, oh my God, this is incredible. And in the first month I've lost 15 pounds. Not everyone can expect for that to be their experience. Quite often it can be. So I would say the majority for that one, if it's being dosed mindfully, can be very successful for a lot of different types of people, meaning depending on the amount of weight, excess weight that you're carrying or whatever the contributing factors there might be, whether it's lifestyle contributed weight or whether it's truly metabolic dysfunction. I mean, there's some fluidity there, certainly. But I think it's something that, again, like no matter why someone might want to come into using a GLP-1, I think everyone has the right to get help, you know? And that's been kind of my message. Who am I to say who needs it and who doesn't, and who needs to try it the hard way first before they resort to taking the easy way out? There's been so many conversations like that. And I'm like, honey, talk to me, sit down for a minute and let me tell you how easy it's been for me over my lifetime. And of course I have a very specific lens and history. So if you guys don't know my story, the nutshell is I lost 150 pounds in years past without a GLP-1. This was well before I'd ever heard of it, over 10 years ago, through nutrition alone. So that was part of my story and it's still part of my chemistry. And so to that point, fast forward 10, 11 years into my 40-year-old body, having some hormonal fluctuations and going into a deep, deep state of insulin resistance where, I mean, obviously like I have access to a lot of advanced tools and intervention strategies, I was doing all the right things. And like literally nothing was happening. And so I've seen that firsthand, not only with myself, but other clients. So sometimes peptides can really give you that extra leverage to work beyond the diet and lifestyle interventions. Certainly, I would say next level compared to any sort of like your typical capsule supplementation or things like that. Again, depending on what it is you're looking for. But yeah, the GLPs, I mean, gosh, we've learned a lot about them in the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really opened up the public to understanding there's a potential here, at least, if nothing else, depending on, you know, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion, certainly. But if nothing else, we've kind of cracked open this egg of potential, right? And understanding that, hey, there's this entire class of intervention that works like nothing before.
Right.
And in some cases, it can be the thing that unlocks a different trajectory, whether it be for fat loss or, you know, I actually started, I'll back up and say, well before my GLP-1 experience, my life was changed very quickly when I learned about my raging leaky gut and the fact that I could take a capsule VPC. And I mean, it changed my life in the matter of, I would say less than a week. I started to notice progress that I had not seen before after doing every test on the planet, trying every protocol on the planet, spending money like you can't even imagine. Well, you can't imagine, but
I can imagine
spending like disgusting amounts of money between specialists, you know, private practitioners, protocols, tests, all the things. None of it was moving the needle for me the way that peptides have moved the needle for me. Mm-hmm. And so they will always, I think, have a special place in my heart. And it's like people understanding now that, like, holy cow, like these are the kind of results that you can get when it's paired with the right body, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So let's talk about that and back up to GLPs. What does GLP-1 mean? Because I know that this is a gene that you can test for. What does it mean? How do these peptides kind of work on that gene?
Yeah. So basically it is a chemical that your body naturally produces. So GLP-1 is produced by the body naturally. We all have certain levels of it and we can see genetic indication there. We have a couple SNPs that can show us whether or not you tend to run normal or whether you run low on GLP-1 secretion. And basically it's a signaling molecule that helps to strengthen glucose handling. So it can trigger insulin secretion at the appropriate pace so that the body has a more stable and essentially effective blood sugar handling system so that you're not running high on glucose in the bloodstream, if that makes sense. So your insulin communication is more efficient and appropriate, I guess you could say. And part of that actually with the one that I'm taking in the camp of GLPs, there's the semaglutide, which was probably the more OG one, if you will. So that one, the RX would go by Ozempic or Wegovy. And that's the one that we hear so much about. So many scary, scary things about semaglutide. And I think that there is some truth to what we hear. And also I would say you always have to think from the lens of common sense. Okay. So what I've seen go wrong for people with GLPs, well, first and foremost, semaglutide is going to have it's a different experience than tirzepatide, which is very strange because chemically they are almost identical. Tirzepatide has an additional element. So it's basically like a combo peptide. So it's GLP and GIP, which basically makes it a bit more palatable. And again, on paper, it's not a super logical connection. But what I can tell you is this, semaglutide is known to have more digestive impact by a landslide, and it's a little bit less clinically effective. So in other words, compared to tirzepatide or the Mounjaros or now the Zepbounds of the world, tirzepatide is a little bit more, gives you a little more bang for your buck. It works more efficiently. So over, you know, clinical trials, they've seen that people have lost a larger degree of body fat with tirzepatide compared to semaglutide with all other controls about the same. So it seems like they would be tomato, tomato. However, tirzepatide has a much lower occurrence of any type of side effects. So it works better and it basically is more of the walk in the park experience for the majority of people. Now, coming back to the common sense piece, let me ask you guys to think a little bit critically here. And if you have someone who is consuming a standard American diet and living a very sedentary lifestyle and probably has some pre-existing gastro issues coming in the door and adding in something like a semaglutide or a tirzepatide that essentially will start to slow gastric emptying, it's potential that they could have some gastric side effects. It's pretty common sense. Well, for someone who has a pretty healthy, normally functioning GI system, the onset or incidence of side effects is going to be significantly less because they didn't come in the door with issues. You know, so I think that's one thing to consider. Gastroparesis or any other variety or anything of that persuasion is not common. Okay. So we hear a lot of the scary things in the media that make us think, oh God, why would anybody ever take that? Well, if you actually start to look deeper at the studies, they're finding these sorts of events, if you will, in like 1% of participants, which is a very low number. And I, you know, feel badly for the 1%. I hope that, you know, no one listening is going to be in the 1%, but it's essentially pretty rare. Okay. I think the other thing to remember, we hear so much about the rebound weight. Well, there again, if you're eating a standard American diet, and I've seen this happen with clients firsthand, unfortunately, if you're eating standard American diet, and which is basically a low nutrient density, highly processed diet, and you get on a GLP-1 and that GLP-1 gives you a different experience in your headspace, So one of the more noteworthy benefits of it is that you don't really think about food in the same way while you're taking them. It reduces almost immediately the snacking urge, the urge to overeat. It definitely helps to re-strengthen the signaling for satiety or fullness. Okay. So you start taking a GLP-1 medication, all is well, you lose the weight that you wanted. And then, you know, you don't want to keep paying for the GLP-1 because we know that they're not cheap. So you stop cold turkey and you go back to, you know, over the next 6 weeks, you slowly but surely slip into your old standard American diet.
Right.
Would anyone think it would be reasonable to expect that individual and that set of circumstances to maintain a weight loss? No, of course not.
Obviously.
So it's like, you know, the people who think or hear all of these really scary stories and like warnings and hazards and stuff like that, it's like, you have to really kind of think critically here and think, is that likely to apply to me? Well, in my world, the clients that I work with, most of them are already doing the lifestyle. They're not eating a standard American diet. I work with women who are going nuts because they're already doing all the things. They're probably doing too many things.
Right.
Whether they're counting macros or, you know, doing a low carb or doing all the, you know, workouts in the world, and they're just not getting the needle to move. That's typically my clientele. Okay. So we see a lot less of those side effects, scary things. And I can tell you when it's done mindfully, you can absolutely taper off the same way that you taper on. And there are a lot of happy individuals out there who have lost weight and maintained after getting off a GLP-1. So it definitely can be done. I think it's just a matter of cutting through all the crap that we hear online and then also kind of thinking from it from that kind of lens of, does this make sense for me? Does this apply to me?
Right. You know? Yeah. And even my partner, he's been on semaglutide for about a year and he's tapered off and his weight has been stable. And he's not even one that changed very much about his diet. So
Totally. I've seen, like, I have nothing but great things to say about the whole camp of GLPs because I've seen it just change so many lives. And I mean, I think, God, like, throw us a bone, you know, like living in America and the food quality and all of the different types of exposures that we come into contact with and just the overall quality of life these days. And not to sound like a Debbie Downer, but I'm like, God, like, dude, throw me the bone,
right?
And put it in my hip, you know, because it definitely is a great offset to a lot of the different things that our bodies are trying to keep up with in this modern life.
Yeah. And so as someone who's been overweight pretty much my whole life, like around the 20 to 40 pounds, I tried both of them and I did not see results. Do you have any idea why that might have been happening? Semaglutide made me incredibly dizzy and nauseous. So that was out, even at a super low dose. And then tirzepatide increased my heart rate to the point where it was uncomfortable. And I saw that was actually a really common side effect. And I kind of already struggled with heart palpitations, so I wasn't able to move forward. But is there any like type of person that may not do well? Because I've heard from a few other people that, they just had really bad side effects from both. Not like stomach paralysis, but just like my body doesn't like this type of side effect.
You know, I would say this, there's definitely a learning curve. I think with either, I've seen a better response with tirzepatide. So I usually lean that way. That's pretty much the only one that I really coach to anymore. But I think there are going to be non-responders. I think it's a very small subset of individuals and it sucks. I mean, it really sucks because like, I want you to love it as much as I do. And, you know, there are going to be those cases where it's like the odd man out that your body just doesn't respond to that particular intervention. But I would also say some things that I've helped with clients that might've been slower to respond than other people. Sometimes it is about looking at other lifestyle factors and not that that's likely to be relevant for you specifically, but for some people we've targeted a slower response or lower response in general to if they're not sleeping well, number one. Certainly a lot of the clients that I have coached have had more pronounced hormonal imbalance that we needed to work with at the same time. So it's definitely not like a one size fits all or like a cure all, but it's something that I think there's a lot of different angles to consider. I would also say, especially with the tirzepatide and the heart palpitations, for some people, it actually reduces heart rate, blood pressure. So I would say there may be something. Yeah. I would say like the majority would lean the other way. So I'm curious, I would be curious to know more about that, if that would be a connection or a side effect, that there would be something we could do to counter it, for example. And it could be as simple as like a very strategic electrolyte shift. That's one of the things that actually helped me along the way. That's a maybe, you know, so it's like, well, is it worth doing another test of it? It depends. That's totally a you question, but I would say,
well, you know me, I'm on this long-term mineral balancing program. So I already kind of struggled with the heart palpitations, which is why when it raised it just a little bit, it was uncomfortable. Yeah. So, you know, I'll revisit it later. That's all I can say.
Well, I'm chomping at the bits to see, like, I don't know, my heart says, oh my gosh, let's put our heads together and see if we can like dial it in somehow. Because of all of the things that you have access and all of the awareness and metrics that you have, I bet there's something there that could be a little tweak that would unlock the thing. Like in my heart of hearts, I want that to be true for you.
Right.
And also in my realistic smidge of my brain says, you know, maybe it's just not for everyone. But I will say I have not yet had someone come through my tirzepatide protocol that hasn't seen results. I've definitely had a couple that were like, I can't deal with this right now. If they were having like a little bit more of a learning curve or for whatever reason, it's definitely not for everyone. But yes, I'm so curious.
Well, when I dive in again, we'll be in touch, but
yeah,
my heart rate still, it's better now. It's much better. So
good.
Let's talk about, okay, we've got peptides. They've been around forever. Why all of a sudden is there a prescription? What is that about? What is the difference between a prescription and the peptides that already existed?
Well, the short version is there's really not a difference, except for the prescriptions are packaged with preservative. So, and they're pre-dosed. As far as the GLP-1s, so basically you go and you pick up a package of relatively shelf-stable peptides that are in a dosing pen. So you basically take the dose that you've been given. So there's not really any fluidity there, but essentially the active ingredient is the exact same. So we see the actives coming from either, well, you're going to order either from a peptide research facility and or a compounded or compound pharmacy. So compound pharmacies can, of course, blend whatever else they want in with the active. And that's kind of how they fly under the radar and avoid basically like trademark infringements, or not trademark, maybe it's copyright, the patented, whatever the thing is. But essentially certain manufacturers have patents on those particular peptides. It doesn't mean that you can't still get the peptide. They just sell it through their channels so that they can go into the medical system. It's kind of a catch-22, right?
Yeah.
For me, I will say I took both. I've taken both. I've taken semaglutide in the past, didn't sit well with me. I've taken prescription Mounjaro for the better part of 6 months, I would say, and then lost, because I had insurance coverage for that, lost coverage for that, and then went back to getting peptide version. And there's also a great debate in that whole camp as well. Like there's a lot of people that will say research peptides are not safe. You always have to buy from a compounded pharmacy. Well, so then late in the fall of 2023, we saw a big crackdown with compounding pharmacies, to where they were no longer permitted to sell or write or fill certain peptides, not just GLP-1s, but many, many, many of them, such as other types of body composition peptides like BPC, I believe was on the list. A lot of the main players were impacted. And so we've seen that big shift in the entire peptide space, provider space, that, you know, that hit their market pretty hard. So now you see people that are starting to try to self-source and scouring the internet for, you know, who's got the cheapest tirzepatide. And that's where it's like, oh my God, you guys, like, again, let's pause, pump the brakes. I know it sounds attractive and tempting because we all want the result, but it's like, you're literally injecting something into your body. Like there's a lot of ways where this could go wrong, especially if you are a beginner, especially if math is not your forte. There's a lot of math involved, right? And even with that, like if this is something that you've never used before, then probably one of the worst ideas you could do is to find a link to a particular thing and order it and inject it and hope for the best. Like that's not really how it goes. But basically it's essentially the same thing. And there's really, it's kind of a baloney description to say like research grade. I've heard people using the terminology research grade peptides. That is not a thing. Like that does not exist. And anyone who is telling you that it does is probably trying to sell you something different. But in the industry as a whole, peptides have to be labeled for research purposes only, because otherwise they're going to get in trouble with the FDA. They can't, mm-hmm. you know, sell things and give you dosing indications. There's a huge liability there. So of course they're going to say, not on my watch. I don't know what you're doing with this, but I know you're not injecting it into yourself, human being.
Right.
Like that's just a given thing, you know? And there are some individuals, probably none of whom would be listening to this episode, probably no one listening at all, would be the type of individual who would have a red flag if something wasn't FDA approved. I'm going out on a limb there and certainly don't want to offend anyone, but you know, if the shoe fits, most of the people in our world are like looking for the things that are not necessarily FDA endorsed, if we're being right. honest.
The things that they're trying to ban because they work so well. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of where we see peptides living. But truly there's not any difference, especially if you're speaking to GLP-1s, there's really no difference in the active ingredient. With a peptide, it's going to be the pure peptide. There's nothing in it. It doesn't even come ready to use. You have to reconstitute it. So it's a very manual process, but definitely there are some compounded options that are still available if you have access and a provider who goes that route. So that's kind of the scoop on like what is what. It's all essentially the same thing. But right. you know, my concern, and of course, always kind of going into it with the risk assessment, right? So genetically speaking, I know that I don't have a hard time with metals, believe it or not. So I'm like, I'm going to keep an eye on this. And so I was running metals tests, through the time that I was taking the prescription with preservative, and I really didn't notice any response. So I think in different bodies, that's going to have a different ending. And as we have different sensitivities and of course, other factors, current toxic load and things like that to be considered, that might be a deal breaker for some people, versus going with a peptide where I know exactly what's in it because I mixed it myself and it's sterile. It's in my fridge. And I know the date that it was mixed and I know the date that, and the amount that I'm dosing and stuff like that. So it's definitely a little bit more controlled in my opinion, as long as you're sourcing it through a reputable peptide provider. And there aren't that many of those, I should say.
Yeah. And so that's another thing, since peptides break down so quickly, that's why the medications are with preservatives to make it last longer.
Exactly. So for example, the pens that you get, they can be like the expiration date is probably not for at least 12 months, but you can even leave them unrefrigerated for up to 21 days in the pens. So like they're well preserved, let's just say it like that. Which, I mean, again, depending on, you know, the personal perspective and personal chemistries, for some people that's going to be a bad news bears. And for some people it's going to be like, you know, if the convenience factor is going to be okay, as well as the tolerability there, then go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other issue I have with the prescriptions are the starting dose to me seems astronomically very high. Do you agree with that?
For many people, they're going to do best if they go slow and low, and meaning slower than that entry dose. So yeah, I mean, that's really the beautiful part about doing it either from a compounded pharmacy, you could kind of get that effect as well, where you have that ability to adjust dosing down to a very micro degree. But yeah, definitely with, you know, self-mixed and dosed peptides, you can start wherever you want. You can dose as often as you want. you know, it's really up to you. And that's where, again, you're going to need some guidance on that for the most part, but you can definitely take it down to a degree where you're not even really going to know that you took something just to start to introduce things. So certainly some of the mast cell clients that I work with, we, and not with GLP-1s for the record, but some of those clients, we do take things to like a drop, you know, of whatever the thing is to introduce, just incredibly slow and controlled. Mm-hmm. So there's ways that that can be done. Certainly. And there's a lot of advantage to that.
Yeah. And I was dealing with mast cells. So that's why I went very, very slowly. And also no surprise, I probably had reactions to things that most people don't have.
Yeah.
So for GLP-1s, there's so many new ones coming out on the market, and I assume they're all just like, let's just add another molecule here, like barely a difference, kind of like with semaglutide and tirzepatide.
Yeah.
Are there any that are have come out that you're like, oh, this one sounds even better? Is there anything exciting on the horizon?
Yes and no. If you had asked me that 6 months ago, the one, and I don't have the name in front of me, so I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's retatrutide, I believe. Mm-hmm. Starts with an R. Retatrutide, is that right? Okay, don't come for me if that's not the right, but you'll know, I mean, that's close enough. Yeah. That's kind of like the third generation. If you consider tirzepatide to be like the second generation, the dual, and then this is going to be like a triple agonist kind of situation, but it's crazy expensive right now. And honestly, as far as trials go, it doesn't justify, the performance does not justify the additional cost. In my opinion, I haven't yet had anyone even anecdotally say like, oh, this is amazing and it's worth the price tag compared to tirzepatide. Now, I guess if you ask someone who was non-responsive to tirzepatide, then possibly. So I think maybe continuing to explore if that's going to scratch the itch for maybe lower responders, that might be an opportunity. But really comparing apples and apples, it's not outperforming so far. But yeah, I'm sure that it won't be long. And I think especially the motivation is huge for the manufacturers to develop things that are more available or whatever it is that their intentions are that aren't always going to be aligned with mine. But I think that we will absolutely start to see more over the next 12 months, coming years in this department. I think it's only going to get more mainstream than it already is.
Yeah, which I think is great.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Have you had to give up coffee for health reasons? Maybe because of the stress it was putting on your adrenals, maybe because it was messing with your sleep, maybe because you felt terrible after drinking it, or maybe because you were told coffee had mold on the beans and you needed to stay away from mold. Well, what if I told you there's an organic, mycotoxin-free, quality coffee that contains reishi spores or Ganoderma lucidum? Ganoderma lucidum helps to modulate your immune system, adapt to stress, balance hormones, and doesn't give you the jitters or shakes like regular coffee used to. Sounds too good to be true, right? It's called King Coffee by the company Organo. And King Coffee came into my life when I was struggling with chronic hives, full body eczema, and mast cell activation syndrome. I hadn't drank coffee in years because it made me feel anxious, shaky, and clammy. So I had no expectations that drinking King Coffee would be any different. However, I decided to give it a try after seeing lots of amazing practitioners talk about the benefits of reishi online. I tried a 7-day sample and the chronic hives were gone by day 5. I was in shock. After that, I dove into the research on reishi and found that there are over 3,000 peer-reviewed PubMed clinical trials using reishi Ganoderma as an intervention. The company Organo also has a patent protected on their harvesting process. They double crack open the spore shells, which makes them up to 80% more potent than the body of the reishi, which is usually used in other reishi products. This also makes the spores 90% more bioavailable for your body to use. If you would like to try King Coffee, visit thehealerrevolution.myorganogold.com, or for a 7-day trial, you can check out my link tree on my Instagram at Amanda Panacea. So let's sidetrack. I know everyone loves the GLP-1s, but let's move on to some of these immune, like modulating immune peptides. Because the one that I did really well with was the KPV that we had talked about. We had a consultation, and that one is fantastic for things like mast cell, candida overgrowth, itching, histamine issues. Let's talk about this one next.
I love some KPV. It's definitely, I would say, in my top three, maybe top five at least. Certainly with working with clients who need fast relief, it's typically going to lead with KPV. If it's anything from the histamine bucket, I would say KPV is basically a blend of lysine, proline, and valine, which some of those might sound more familiar, but basically what it does, it has antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory effects, but it also is immunoregulatory. So it's literally going to start to turn down the communication of the mast cells, of histamine response on a very systemic level. And I've not yet had someone who didn't tolerate KPV. Like, it's just not something that I've even heard of anecdotally. And so it's almost kind of like, if there were a cure-all, like, that might actually be a front runner for it. And I will say, like, you can actually get KPV in capsule version. I haven't actually gotten results from oral, either capsules, or there's a liquid version. And I tend to steer people, if you can inject, then let's go that route, because that one is just so much more effective for a delivery system. But I do have some clients who have tried the capsules, at least in the KPV. And so I think obviously for some people, that's going to be more comfortable than learning how to do a self-injection. But KPV is one of those things that, you know, especially if you have a tendency towards food sensitivities, any sort of allergic responses, which is like a huge umbrella, obviously, it's one that I would say, keep it in the freezer. You know, if something comes up, you can always pop it in the rotation for a couple of weeks, for a month or so, or however long you need. It's one that you don't always have to stay super consistent with. And in fact, you don't want to dose these things forever. Most peptides, you do, you know, have a cycle of them and then you take a break. You shouldn't necessarily, something like KPV, you shouldn't need to lean on it for extended periods of time, but it can be kind of like a quick fix, so to speak, to really turn down some, put out some fires.
Yeah. I have had clients that did really well with the oral spray, actually.
Oh, good.
So good. Yeah, for the people who, if you think I'm sensitive, like cannot tolerate almost anything, and we have a hard time even taking a drop of homeopathy.
Yeah.
KPV is great in those situations.
Yeah. I think it's amazing. And it does so many amazing things. I will also say, kind of a close cousin to KPV, if you're needing a little bit less support in the mast cell department or overall histamine department, yet still want some, I would say maybe melanotan would be of interest to some of the girlies. So have you taken melanotan? Yeah. I can't remember.
I did.
Okay.
Yep. I took it right before I went on my cruise for a month. So that I was nice and tan.
Yes. Amazing. I'm a big fan of this one. So there's a melanotan 1 and melanotan 2, which are almost very close to the same thing. Some people do better with 1 versus 2, although there really don't seem to be a lot of black and white, components to that. I would say the main thing about melanotan is, yes, it is going to have a lot of the similar components to KPV, but it does make you tan. So it basically works with your melanin production. So it's actually very protective. So a lot of people start taking it before they're going to have sun exposure, because it will make it almost impossible to get sunburned. And so if you are, you know, someone who's fair or tendency to sensitivity there, it can be helpful for that. But definitely it also has an impact on regulating blood sugar and a little bit of boost in libido for many people, depending on how it's dosed. And so that's why they call it the Barbie peptide. So it's a big fan favorite. I would say this time of year, I just have some on order. Like, actually, I think it's coming in today. So I like to dose melanotan for a couple months in the spring into the summer, as I'm kind of building up my tolerance to sun exposure. And it just is a beautiful, beautiful side effect to get a nice tan going into that season of the year.
Yeah. And this one works on the melanocyte stimulating hormone, which is a big one for those exposed to mold. So a KPV is kind of like the next generation of that. And it does not make you tan, which is kind of sad if you really want to be tan, because melanotan did also make me extremely nauseous. So I had to do it at night, and then the next day be in the sun, take a break.
Yeah. Melanotin, I would say that's a good, good piece of advice to remember. That one, you want to go micro dosing,
Yeah.
at least to lead in. That one's kind of cool though, because that's one that you can use in a nasal spray. So certain peptides are
Oh,
basically
yeah.
small enough to deliver intranasally. And so that's one, that does work for that. And then also fun fact for you, there's another peptide, PT-141, which is typically going to be given for libido. Can be used by males or females, but it's actually a derivative of melanotan too. So it's like all of these little discoveries,
yeah.
these little lab tweaks come up with all these different types of peptides that are like cousins, basically. So that one's really one of my top favorites that, again, is typically really well tolerated. Some people do get a little bit of nausea. For me, the funny thing about melanotan, when I've done it in a nasal spray, give it 30 minutes to an hour later, and I can guarantee you there's going to be a little wave come up. Like I get a little bit of a flush and like a literal wave of nausea, and then it's gone. Like it lasts for maybe 10 seconds, but it's very like palpable and very consistent. And then I'll the rest of the day, I'm perfectly fine. So it's very strange like that, but yeah, that's melanotan. So yeah, both melanotan and KPV are basically working on that alpha melanocyte pathway, which is super cool that they're related like that. And then what else? That also
leads, because that's the inflammation aspect of it, is helping on that pathway.
Yeah. And you can start to also even like tangent there into some of the thymosins, you know, are fantastic for immunoregulatory function. And even with the thymosins, like there's so many different variations of almost the same thing. And depending on who you talk to, people are going to have a favorite, or they'll say, oh, I use this one for this one and this one for that one. And again, there's so much fluidity, but it's a fun thing to play and discover for sure.
Yeah. And I remember that was one of the first ones that I ever heard of and ever tried, one of the thymosin alpha one, I believe.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice anything, but I was also getting very sick at that time, not getting better.
Yeah.
And, but I had listened to what is his name? Kurt. He always does the peptide summits.
Oh yeah.
Familiar with him?
The Russian.
Yes.
Yeah, Pattinson, I think it is. Yeah.
He was talking about it literally cured his Lyme disease. He had like cardiovascular involvement, Lyme carditis, and thymosin alpha one was it.
Yeah.
Fully recovered.
That's the thing. I mean, I think we especially like the more that you kind of have the ear to the ground on the peptide scene, it's like, you will absolutely hear those miraculous stories, whether it's something like that, or, you know, mine with my gut and, or mine with my metabolism, or, and, so they're very powerful. And again, it's so easy to tailor them to the individual and, you know, dial in the dose and things like that. They're very palatable. It's almost like they're too good to be true. So
yeah.
If you take away anything from this, they're not too good to be true. It's just a matter of mining the information that you need to get your hands on it, you know, if that makes sense.
Dialing it in like with a peptide is the future of how we will treat illnesses. You know, we'll get so good at understanding, oh, here's your genetic presentation, and this other test says that this is what's going on.
Yep.
Let's give you this exact peptide formula that doesn't it's not on the market. We just create it for you. And now you're cured.
Well, and that's where it gets really fun, is where you start stacking and mixing and things like that.
Yeah.
And like in another life, maybe I would have a compounding pharmacy, but at the moment, and that's, you know, the thing that I love about doing peptide coaching is, if you can like teach them how to fish, then they can fish forever, you know? So that's actually the benefit of not actually being a supplier, is literally just teaching people, here's what you need to order from this site. Here's the dosing schedule, and walking them through to get to that dose titration. And then that's typically a protocol that can be repeated as desired. So like, if you want to run a KPV round in 6 months, then you don't need a coach for that. You'll know exactly where to go to get what you need and self-service. And so I think that's the thing that has been the most empowering as far as format or coaching people and helping people get an appropriate level of supervision, but also basically have an access ongoing to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there need to be more, I think there needs to be more accessibility, and that's like an understatement here, but.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the other cool ones. So you mentioned Pinealon. Is that how you say it?
Oh yeah. Epitalon. Epitalon is just
Epitalon.
With an E.
Okay.
Epitalon. Epitalon has just rocked my world, I will tell you. Just in the past 90 days, I've taken my first Epitalon round. You basically take it for about 3 weeks. And in 3 weeks' time, I have seen a radical reset of some really wild hormonal stuff that was going on, like very pressing. So the nutshell version is I started doing some HRT back towards, well, I tweaked HRT. I've been kind of dabbling in HRT for the past couple of year and a half or so. And frankly, I've gotten into a couple of bad dosing situations. I've had three different practitioners that dose me too aggressively. And so I've basically been left to kind of clean up the fallout from that. And to the tune of my estrogen was almost 900 earlier, like back at the end of January. I could not get a practitioner to give me anything. Like they were literally having me go to make sure that I didn't have tumors. They sent me for a pelvic ultrasound. They were running all sorts of labs to see, like, basically if I had massive tumors that were producing this much estrogen. And I did not. Thank God we were able to rule some things out. But there was literally no plan of action they could give me unless I wanted to go on birth control. Of course, how surprising. I mean, either that, my OBGYN was literally telling me we can either do an IUD for you, or if it's bad enough and it continues, then let's talk about a hysterectomy. Okay. And I'm like, okay, like hold the phone. I've got this. Right. And so I basically just pulled out of the hat, out of the old peptide hat. So I dosed Epitalon for 3 weeks. And then there's another one that's a bioregulator, similar, a little bit more similar to like glandulars, if you will. So less of the amino acid persuasion, but more basically they are essentially glandulars. So that was the combo. So Epitalon and then one other Zinalutin, I think is how you say it. I don't know. They're typically yeah. Russian names of the bioregulators. But basically these are things that help to restore the hormone signaling. So I happen to know I have a genetic weakness when it comes to estrogen receptors. And so I had to just really kind of take a big pause when they start talking about IUTs and hysterectomies being my options. I'm like, a timeout. So I kind of went back to the drawing board and started to piece together what seemed to be going on. And what seemed to be going on was, I think there was a shift in my chemistry that was resulting in my body just continuing to pump out estrogen. And so knowing that I had that genetic piece to it, I'm like, I can target my estrogen receptors. And if I can get them to crank up, then that's something that should yield a better, more balanced result. And I was honestly blown away. I did not expect for it to work that well, that fast. But hey, like I'll take it again, like throw me a bone here. We've had a good run of hormonal imbalances to learn things the hard way. But yeah, that one is forever going to be in my toolkit. Epitalon basically, like many, they actually work on pituitary gland regulation and signaling. So that one can really be almost like an adaptogenic, not to say that it's only going to work for extreme estrogen dominance, but I think it's one that can be a great reset for those of us in our 40s who are struggling with those kind of shifty hormone levels that are bringing up some symptoms that may not be familiar to many of us. The other thing that it does is help with your melatonin production. So I'm just saying, like, I've been sleeping like a champ, which is always welcome. That kind of support is always welcome in my life.
Yes.
So that one's been really exciting lately. I've also been dosing my spring run of MOTS-C, which is one of my favorite mitochondrial peptides. MOTS has another one that has so many different fringe benefits. So it's actually great because they call it an exercise mimetic. So it gives you a lot of the chemical benefits of doing more workouts than you're actually doing. So it's great for muscle recovery on the mitochondrial front, but it's basically proliferation of mitochondria. So even people who aren't looking for workout benefits or body comp changes, it's actually fantastic for essentially restoring the function and efficiency of the ATP. So it can be great for chronic fatigue and things like that. Again, typically well-tolerated. MOTS, I love how I feel on MOTS. Like my brain feels good. My body feels good. my checkbook does not feel great on Mott's. It's like one of the spendiest ones, but it's one of those.
I did that one once. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, dang. But
you end up spending like $1,500 after you like look at each peptide. You're like, I want to try that one. I want to try that one.
That's always the one that like, I save it on the shelf for people that like are, that is accessible for them at that time. But it does so well. It's like, dang, I wish we could find, can we all collectively just get better pricing on mitochondrial peptides because we need them. But yeah, that one's pretty cool. And then I think a lot of people hear about NAD, you know, so NAD is something that can be given in a lot of different formats and technically could be considered a peptide. It's going to be most effective if you're taking it either through IV or through injection. And there's a lot of places that charge a lot of money to get an NAD IV. And that's of course going to be a mega dose, which is not going to be tolerated really well for those of us who might have methylation issues. There's a few different deliveries there. There's actually a topical patch that I've been rocking with for the past couple months that is actually very effective for people who can't inject or don't want to. But definitely that's one that is, well, it upregulates sirtuin activity. So we can see, again, if you have dysfunction in your sirt genes, if you have SNPs there, then that would be like worth the coin on that one, you know, for other people that have perfectly functioning sirtuin levels, maybe a little bit more lackluster.
So, and what is sirtuin?
It's basically an antioxidant. So there's sirtuin's a big one that we see a lot of different biohacking efforts that people will claim that boost sirtuins, but NAD is probably the top like mainstream supplement. And even with that, most capsule are actually not true NAD. They're like precursors to NAD. So a lot of people that are trying to sell you on the concept of boosting your sirtuins for antioxidant purposes, making you feel like you're 20 years old again, is kind of the spiel. But there's other pathways involved. So for some of us, for example, I don't have any SNPs in my sirtuin genes. I have SNPs in my SOD genes. So I actually need to do there. I get more bang for my buck, so to speak, if I support my SOD pathways, which there's not necessarily a specific peptide for that, but there are some herbs and things that are clinically trialed to support SOD upregulation.
And that's superoxide dismutase?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like sirtuin's, you know, other cousin.
Right. Yeah.
They all kind of do the same thing, but just like a slightly different pathway.
Part of making energy.
Yeah, exactly. That's the version that most of us kind of need to know is like, tell me, what's it going to do for me?
Exactly. Part of that whole cellular metabolism process.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we've talked about a lot of peptides. I mean, there are hundreds now that you could, at one point I was reading the descriptions like, God, I need this one too. I want this
one.
So you can really get lost in it, which is why working with somebody who can kind of narrow down like, okay, these ones are the safest. These ones have the most research. This one sounds like something that could benefit you, and not just ordering them off of a weight loss spa clinic online that has a Facebook ad. Very, very important.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about where you can actually get these that are safe besides just some of the medications. Like there's so many websites out there, like I just mentioned, like
there are so many sites. I would say there are really only a couple that are at least in the US that are reputable. There are a couple around the world, of course, but the primary one that I use actually does international shipping. And that's important to me because I do a lot of international clients, but they're reputable. They've been around for a long time. They're vetted. They have, you know, good pricing, the competitive pricing, I should say. And so I usually work with Limitless. It's Limitless Life Nootropics. And you can actually create an account with my link that I'll share with you. Some of the peptides that might be of interest through today's conversation, they don't necessarily keep public facing on their site. So if you sign up with a referral link, you'll have access to all of what they call their VIP peptides. So that may be of interest. Although again, you know, not medical advice, disclaimer galore here, but that's something that for people who are looking for reputable sourcing, I'd much rather point you in the right direction of like, hey, here's the company that I use myself and refer clients to. So they're really my primary go-to right now for pretty much everything. There's another one that is US based that is again, very reputable, a little bit less competitive on the pricing and sometimes a little bit less on the availability, but I would say if it sounds like too good to be true on the pricing that you're seeing on the internet, it probably is. If it's that easy for you to pop in a Google search, especially if you're looking for GLP-1s, I would say with an extra layer of caution, because there are so many peptide sources or vendors that are popping up overnight, getting it from God knows where, mixing it with God knows what, and they're not really doing any sort of quality checks or anything like that from third parties to actually know what you're buying. And they're going to probably be a little bit fly by night, to some degree, as in if your peptide order shows up and it is what they said it was, you know, there's a chance it could be fine. There's a greater chance that it could go really, really badly. And so truly, like, knowing that there are really literally two that I would feel confident recommending or even purchasing from myself within the US, it's that slim. And there are probably hundreds by now that do actually sell peptides. Yes. So always vet your sources. I would say, like, if there's anything that comes up for some reason that they don't have on my two primary peptide sources, then, like, I wait. I don't just order from anywhere. There are, like, a couple of little nuanced sites that I'll use for some international clients, depending on what it is. If it's a little bit more of a price break for them to order from something that's, like, in the UK, for example, I do have one source that's in the UK. There's one source that's been really strong in Canada that I know, unfortunately, they've had a lot of transition in the past year. So I'm not really sure to what degree they're operating very well right now, but I've kind of replaced them with Limitless because they ship to Canada. So yeah, that's kind of the scoop. But yeah, Limitless is wonderful. The thing that I will tell you is, you know, if you're ordering peptides, they don't give you dosing. They don't give you mixing instructions. They just provide the goods. And furthermore, like, I should say, you don't want to go asking, like, you can't email customer service, for example, and be like, hey, I just received this bottle of tirzepatide. Can you tell me what to do with it? No, they cannot tell you. They, like, don't ask. It's not going to happen, kind of thing. So just so everyone's kind of fair warning on that. I've had people, unfortunately, over the years, see something that I posted on Instagram and then message me weeks later. And they're like, oh, hey, I ordered that peptide that you posted. Can you tell me what to do with it? And it's like, well, it's a little bit more complex than that. But yeah, just so you know, like, that's how the peptide world is working. As far as ordering your own research peptides, you can get the peptides. That's usually not the issue. It's more of like, what do you do with it when it arrives?
So, right. Yeah. You have to mix it with a special type of mixing agent. And then you have to make sure you're, like you said, using math to make sure you're mixing the right amount and then therefore dosing the right amount. There's some conversion usually from milligrams to milliliters and things like that involved. So
there's a lot of math. And that's kind of like the beauty of having a practitioner guidance, is like, you don't have to figure that stuff out. At the end of the day, it's generally pretty simple math, but then you also have to know, like, what is the dose that you're trying to achieve? Well, did you get it off of a Facebook group? Or, you know, there's a couple of books out there too, as far as like basic peptide guidelines. But I've not ever used them personally, so I don't necessarily have one to recommend, but they do exist. There are some baselines out there, but yeah, just cannot state it enough to be just super cautious of what you're ordering. And the fact that you feel confident knowing how to mix and then how to dose, even with like the backwater, right? So I've had people who try to cheap out and get backwater from Amazon or something like that. Backwater, it shouldn't cost you more than $20. It's not a big expense, but you have to still source it reputably, because I've had people have reactions from ordering crappy backwater. Mm-hmm. But bacteriostatic water is basically the reconstitution solution. It's a sterile liquid, and it's the same thing that hospitals and medical facilities use. And there for a while, it was unattainable. We couldn't get it for a while, and the peptide community were all freaking out because nobody had any backwater to mix our peptides with. But that was like in the throes of pandemic living. So yeah. Hopefully that was a fluke thing that will never happen again. Right. But yeah, just always, you know, erring on the side of extreme caution and logic, it can be truly a whole new world. of interventions and support. And I think it is so much fun. There's something really badass I'm going to tell you. Like the obvious barrier to entry here is like for people who don't feel comfortable giving themselves an injection. And I'll tell you, like, it took me a little while to work my head up around it as well, or work up the nerve to it. And then you do it once and you're like, oh, like that was it.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't feel anything. It wasn't terrible. It didn't hurt. And so I think once you get into it, there's something just really kind of nerdy and cool and a little bit badass about dosing yeah. peptides. I don't know. Maybe that's just my kink, but I'll own it.
Well, it's like degree. Sovereignty, you know, I'm doing this myself and it's working.
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you, there's a very special place right now in my heart and in my spirit that I cannot wait till I go back to see my OBGYN. And in fact, she's supposed to call me and talk to me because we were retesting those levels and watching them. And they're now like picture perfect, honestly, better than they've been in 5 years. And so I just cannot wait to get some clout with my OBGYN and tell her that like I fixed my estrogen levels.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's incredibly satisfying, not just for bragging rights, but truly like it's been revolutionary. So very cool.
Awesome. Well, yeah, congrats on that. I love that feeling.
Thank you.
Okay, cool. So let's wrap it up. In the world of peptides, what would you say is like biggest mistakes versus like make sure to do this?
Biggest mistakes I would say would be trying to dive into the deep end and dose yourself, not having any supervision. I don't think there's a lot that can go wrong if you're someone who's doing it mindfully.
Well, a lot of wasted money.
True. Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing. I think setting expectations, and with the expectation that they're not everything. Like, yes, I talk highly about peptides because they have been very impactful for me and many clients in ways that cannot be or have not really been duplicated by other interventions. And so I think there's a very special place for them, but also just know that they're usually not the one thing, right? And they're not going to, you know, outdo a misaligned lifestyle, right? So they're not going to do all the heavy lifting for you in most cases. In a few cases, they kind of could. There are people that do that, you know, that fall into that category. But truly, I think that's the main thing is like, just make sure you know what you're doing. Go slow and low. You know, I know that there's part of many of us who just want to go, give it to me now, give me the solution, especially when you're like injecting and you're like, oh, okay. So if that amount was good, then probably twice that amount would be great. And that doesn't always apply to peptides. Take it seriously. You know, there are people that can have allergic responses, even just to like the mixing water that would be totally independent of the actual peptide. There are certain peptides that are known to produce more histamine response. And so if that's something that would be relevant in your life, you need to be extra cautious and possibly take precautionary measures before introducing a new peptide if you're unsure or have any hesitation there. So I think just treating them with respect and also being aware that there are going to be some peptides that work for a lot of people that may not do the thing for you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. So I will post your Limitless link in the show notes so people know where to buy these. And also, of course, your information. So everybody can consult with you before they get started, as you just instructed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing, like having conversations around it is really exciting. And definitely it's important to let people know that they have such a strong potential for healing powers and mm-hmm. that they can be relatively affordable. They don't have to be like behind the hidden door of wellness clinics that are charging, aggressive prices for it. And, you know, not to knock that either. Of course, people are paying for their expertise and their supervision to some degree, but there's other ways and it doesn't have to always go through a prescription. And if I can help this to be a little bit more accessible for more people, then I've shared what I wanted to share. So
yeah.
I hope that that's helpful. They do actually have a discount code as well. So there's a link that you need to do to sign up for the VIP club. And then Code Designer Jeans will work on many of their peptides, not all of them, but many of them. So hope that helps just a little bit.
Awesome. Yeah. Any discount always helps.
Yeah.
All right, Lindsay. Well, this was so amazing. I love chatting with you about all these extra VIP type interventions, especially when people have a lot of success with them like you have. Yeah. And I really appreciate all of your knowledge as usual.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's always so fun to share and gab and gossip about peptides and all the other fun, wild things that we do. So thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I am just so thrilled that you're listening to the Healer Revolution podcast. This has been a huge passion project for me and super therapeutic on top of that, helping me to use my voice and connect with other like-minded individuals. So if you're enjoying the podcast, please like and subscribe. Please share on social media or with your audience or friends or loved ones. I truly appreciate it. It does take a lot of time and financial costs to run the podcast, and it is not a moneymaker, let me tell you. So if you are enjoying this, I would truly appreciate your support just by sending me a post, a like, and a subscribe. Thank you so much.